This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to your favorite Saturday morning show, heard exclusively here on WEEB. I am Steve Woodward, and this is Taking Aim. As always, we will begin this week's show by recognizing our loyal and beloved sponsors, the Marketplace Restaurant and Catering. Since 1980, your go-to for breakfast and lunch, and an array of catering services for your intimate office parties or the wedding of the century. The Marketplace, got to try the breakfast burritos, by the way, folks. Check them out for breakfast each and every morning. You'll never get tired of them. The Marketplace, Restaurant and Catering. Also, We the People Declare. We the People Declare, an organization of community servants who are dedicated to acting as watchdogs with regard to the affairs of the village of Pinehurst, as well as the broader Moore County scene. We the People Declare, check them out online. I want to remind you as well of an upcoming show that will be a week from today. Our February 14th show will feature an exclusive interview with retired General Jerry Boykin. Jerry retired as a Lieutenant Governor, U.S. Army, a North Carolina native. He is today the Executive Vice President of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. He has authored a variety of books, both fiction and nonfiction, including his memoir, Never Surrender, A Soldier's Journey to the Crossroads of Faith and Freedom. Jerry will be speaking here in Moore County, to be specific, in Pinehurst at the Country Club of North Carolina on Thursday, February 26th, as part of the James E. Holzhauser Jr. Speaker Series. His presentation is entitled The Nation Should Be Proud, Addressing the Nation's Response to Current Events. If you would like to purchase tickets to General Boykin's appearance, you can do so by going to jhspeakerseries.com, and there you will find all the information you need for the event on February 26th, Country Club of North Carolina. Let's get right to our weekly lineup. We begin, as always, by recognizing Public Enemy Number One. And this week, folks, we had to agree to a two-way tie because I have to say there were two very egregious examples of hypocrisy and deceit, shall we say, on a full scale. In the case of the first Public Enemy Number One, it is a member of the North Carolina State University faculty slash staff, and as you will hear coming up, he got into a little conversation with a person who was recording him, and he didn't really know that. Thanks to our friends at Accuracy in Media, we have that for you. And then we'll hear from Missouri Senator Eric Schmidt, and I'll tee that up after. First, we hear from the DEI warriors. Apparently are not going quietly when it comes to carrying out the diversity, equity, and inclusion agenda. It has gone underground, even though it is banned by the UNC system. Let's play clip one.
A little more racist.
Gotcha.
But okay. We have now, we were under OID, so the Office of Institute of Equity and Diversity, which no longer exists now because they're not allowed to exist.
Okay.
And so it used to be that every UNC system school was mandatory for them to have a chief diversity officer, and then that chief diversity officer ran a diversity office.
Yeah.
But you're now not allowed.
All the way. So it sounds like a lot of flip flopping.
And that was like 11, not the chief diversity officer came about 11 years ago. That was like when it opened.
Yeah. Okay.
And now they're ending it because of it's reversing that policy.
Oh.
And then, wow. It's reversing the policy, but still,
we move.
Get creative.
Exactly. We're still able to do the things that we want to do, have these events and programs. So
this was a very garbled audio because, of course, it was an undercover recording. And this assistant director of the NC State Pride Center, which is the hub of its LGBTQ activity on campus, was basically saying, we move on, we move forward, we do what we have to do, we do what we want to do, we defy the mandate that there be no diversity, equity, inclusion office. It doesn't matter, we're going to do exactly what we want. So we bring this to your attention because it should now be taken to the attention of the UNC system, and I'm sure that this audio will make its way to them, and they will need to start cracking down on these underground operations. So the other public enemy number one candidate this week that we could not ignore simply is the hard left in Washington, D.C., which, despite polling and public opinion, continues to back the idea of unfettered illegal immigration into this country. No matter how many innocent Americans are murdered and raped by these illegal immigrants, the left simply will not let it go. They have turned immigration and customs enforcement into a endangered species in their mind. They are cheering for the public who are confronting our ICE agents in places like Minneapolis, and in some cases physically engaging them. But Missouri Senator Eric Schmidt is having none of it, and he went to the floor of the Senate and drew the clear and stark distinction between the common sense of a legitimate migration policy and the unfettered Biden-era free-for-all. Let's play clip two.
There are two visions competing for the future of this country. One vision holds that immigration law should be enforced, that borders matter, that citizenship means something, and that a nation has both the right and the obligation to decide who may enter, who may remain, and under what rules. The other vision treats our sovereignty itself as immoral. In that vision, borders are an imperialist evil. The law is a fascist oppression. And our identity as Americans is a source of guilt and shame rather than pride and celebration. All of these ideas are connected. For the kinds of people who are attacking federal law enforcement in the streets of Minneapolis. They believe that we don't deserve to enforce our laws as a nation because they believe we don't deserve to exist as a nation. They're not hiding the ball. You can hear it very clearly in their slogans. Quote, no one is illegal on stolen land, end quote. So that's what this is. It's a debate about whether the United States remains a nation or not. The rule of law is essential to the American constitutional order. It is the clearest, most visible expression of self-government. A people cannot enforce its own laws, cannot meaningfully govern itself. As much as some of my colleagues across the aisle wish it was, immigration law is not some break with long-standing norms. A country that cannot say who belongs cannot remain a country at all for very long.
Couldn't have been said better than by the senator from Missouri, Eric Schmidt, the former attorney general of Missouri. And, you know, we should never have to apologize for wanting to be a sovereign nation with borders and for being dedicated to removing those who have come here illegally. Whether they've committed a crime here or not, they certainly, in many cases, have a background of criminal behavior and membership in gangs and sex trafficking operations and drug cartel operations. And we need to put our foot firmly in the ground and stand against that. And by the way, I can't include every soundbite that comes across the radar, but if you are interested, go to your Instagram account and Google William F. Buckley. And you will find a interview that he did in 1977. William F. Buckley, the great conservative commentator and author, really one of the pioneers of the American conservative movement. A 1977 interview in which he's ringing the bell of warning about the perils of illegal immigration all those many years ago, William F. Buckley. So now we get to move from the absurd to the idiotic, and what a pivot that is. But as you know, we have taken up the habit and the tradition of identifying public embarrassment number one each week. Now, this can be an individual, it can be an organization, it can be a group of people, and we usually have so many to choose from. And as I say, we don't have enough minutes in the show to include them all, but this week I thought it was important to call out three specific examples of truly embarrassing, not so much behavior, but I would say embarrassing worldviews and embarrassing conduct and an embarrassing denial of reality. It begins in the chamber of the U.S. House of Representatives. And there, our Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, who is one of the rock stars, one of the shining lights of the Trump administration, a man of soaring intellect and who has the ability of explaining complex economic subjects with great clarity. He is confronted by California Representative Maxine Waters, a loony Democrat, and she has it out for him, and he's having none of it. Let's listen to this delicious clip three.
Secretary Bessent, will you be the voice of reason in the administration and urge Trump to stop waging a war on American consumers and on housing or affordability and putting the economy at risk? Yes or no? You don't have to explain.
Representative Waters,
will you be the voice? Will you be the voice? Will you be the voice? Will you be the voice of reason?
And
will you be the voice
of
reason?
A study from Morgan University has shown.
Reclaiming my time.
Was a mass unfettered immigration.
Mr. Chair, will you let him know that when I asked him
time does belong to the gentlewoman from California.
10 and 20 million immigrants
took
up the housing stock of working Americans, and can you maintain some level of dignity?
General Lambert's time has expired.
No, my time has not expired.
Your time has expired. And the gentleman...
The gentleman took up my time. I think you should recognize that, Mr. Chair.
The gentlewoman's time has expired. The gentlewoman's time has expired.
Well,
the chair recognizes the vice chairman of the committee.
Mr. Chair, if you want a parliamentary inquiry.
Go right ahead, but I would not expect you to do that.
The gentleman.
I want my time back.
The gentleman from Michigan is recognized.
I grant briefly anything that you need to feel you need to address.
I believe the ranking member does not understand the definition of generalized inflation versus one-time price increases. I would also note that housing, especially for working Americans, a Wharton study has shown that the mass unfettered immigration, adding 10 to 20 million new people demanding housing, Congresswoman, is what caused a great deal of housing inflation for working Americans. So you and the Biden administration should be ashamed.
Very well put by the secretary. And boy, Maxine, she's about 86 years old. And, you know, the ship has sailed on her mental clarity. And it's kind of hard to watch, really. But, you know, the folks of California keep electing her. So it's not entirely her fault that she is where she is at this point in time. Now, the Olympic Winter Games have begun, everybody, and while that will bring us many thrilling competitions to watch, the ski jumping and the downhill skiing with Lindsey Vonn, who says she's going to compete with a torn ACL, and of course we'll have ice hockey and all manner of winter sports. With the Olympic Winter Games, and any Olympics for that matter, comes also a lot of media coverage and a lot of, shall we say, woke journalism infesting what should otherwise be a celebration of the youth of the world coming together to compete at the highest level. However, the Associated Press goes to the Olympic Winter Games, which are in Milan, Italy, and its environs, and it notices something that it finds very troubling regarding the Swedish Olympic team. Let's play clip four.
Migration from Africa and the Middle East is changing the demographics of Europe's top winter sports countries, but that hasn't really translated to their largely white rosters heading to the Milan Cortina Winter Olympics. For instance, Team Sweden is almost entirely made up of ethnically Swedish athletes, which is hardly a reflection of the country's diversity, as Sweden has welcomed historic numbers of asylum seekers in recent decades. Experts point to social, financial, and geographical barriers and believe there needs to be a big cultural shift for anything to change. And research shows the single biggest influence behind children getting into and maintaining an interest in sports is their parents. For second-generation immigrants whose parents may be unfamiliar with the sport, young athletes may have a harder time garnering the support that they need.
My parents made me nervous because they felt scared. They felt maybe I was also out of place, maybe something dangerous, maybe something I don't belong to, but I proved them wrong.
There are also financial and geographical factors at play too. Immigrants typically live in major urban areas, away from skiing hubs in the mountains, and are in less privileged economic positions. Participating in winter sports can be very expensive. While some countries like Sweden offer programs to young children that give them access to free ski equipment and the slopes, experts also believe that more needs to be done by winter sports to improve accessibility, specifically for immigrants and underserved communities.
So the problem, as the Associated Press reporter sees it, is that they aren't providing winter sports training opportunities for all the illegal immigrants from the Muslim community who have come into these European countries such as Sweden. You can't make this stuff up, folks. That's both hilarious and a little bit mind-blowing at the same time. Now, at the Milan Games, the U.S. Hospitality Center was originally scheduled to be called the Ice House. They had to change the name, and let's have figure skater Amber Glenn explain why. Play clip five.
If something as simple as changing a name can do anything to make someone feel more comfortable, it's really unfortunate that the term ice isn't ice skating. Like, I'm here on this sheet of ice, and saying that, it's kind of like, oh, disheartening that something so negative has taken that name from us. But that is something so minute in comparison to the struggles and the atrocities that people are facing back home. And my hearts are really with the people back in the U.S.
So thank you, Amber Glenn, for weighing in on the perils of immigration and customs enforcement back home in the U.S., as she says. Hey, we'll be right back with our conversation with Senator Tom McInnes of Moore County and also House Representative Neil Jackson, coming right up.
Hey, it's Luke Black, proud owner of The Marketplace. Since 1980, we've been your neighborhood sandwich shop. We're open Monday through Saturday for breakfast and lunch. If you're craving a fresh sandwich, salad, soup, or a hot cup of local roasted coffee, we've got it all made fresh daily. The Marketplace can cater your next event, from small office lunches to full wedding parties. You can rent our space for private gatherings after hours. You can find The Marketplace at 246 Olmsted Boulevard in Pinehurst. It's not just a sandwich, it's an experience.
This is Jim Nash, small business and homeowner in Pinehurst. Recently, a number of Pinehurst citizens have seen the need to form a new initiative called We the People Declare. Website, wethepeopledeclare.com. We support citizens who value freedom, ethical governance, and community integrity. We will ensure our governance faithfully serves the public's interests, maintains open communication, accountability, and transparency. Get involved. Visit wethepeopledeclare.com and sign up to stay informed.
And now joining us are two gentlemen who you know quite well. Both are seeking re-election in the upcoming election cycle. We are this morning with our state senator, Tom McInnes, and Representative Neil Jackson. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Thank you for coming in. Senator McGinnis is seeking his sixth term in the state Senate, and Neil Jackson his third term in the state House. And just to remind you, mark your calendars, coming up next week, the start of early voting begins on Thursday, the 12th. It'll run all the way through the end of the month of February. There are two locations, the Agriculture Center in Carthage and in Aberdeen, the Recreation Center. So put that on your priority list. You've got 2 weeks to early vote. And, of course, don't forget there is an election day on March 3rd. That'll be a marathon day of voting for about, 13 hours in multiple locations around the county. Gentlemen, let's talk about a few things that are on our radar this morning. But let's start by just having you briefly review, why you have decided to seek re-election, in your case, Tom, to a sixth term.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you for coming together with us this morning and allowing us to have a few moments to speak to the people of Moore and the surrounding counties in your leadership here. You've got a lot of good folks listening today. We want them to know what's going on. I did decide early on that my job was not finished and my job was not complete. And we just got raised to the chairman of the Finance Committee in the Senate. Neil's in that same position, both of us senior chairs of Finance in the Senate and the House here in Moore County. Never before has that happened in the history of Moore County. And both of us are in positions to make things really happen for the county. But one of the things I've done with that position is try to find some low-hanging fruit, which I've found in the income taxes not being collected from the winnings of the sports betting. And we've been estimated that that's about $250 to $350 million a year, and there's not the toolbox items in the tool chest to be able to get that money collected. So I want to go back and get that job finished, get that money collected that is due to the taxpayers of North Carolina, and to use that money appropriately for the betterment of our state.
Neil?
Thank you so much for having us in. Thank you for you just being a good community friend for a long time, and we appreciate all that you do for this community to make it a better place to live. And thanks for WEEB and putting out a conservative broadcast day in and day out. I mean, so many of these media, I mean, they're trying to indoctrinate people with just garbage, humanistic ideas, and WEEB is doing the right thing, so I appreciate that. Steve, I was born 54 years ago today, a couple miles down the road at Moore Regional.
Happy birthday.
Well, it's good to spend my birthday with two of my good friends.
You don't look a day over 53.
Well, I appreciate it. I decided long ago, yelling at the TV doesn't do any good, and you got to get involved. And Scripture tells you you're supposed to pray for those that are in authority, and that's how I even got into this arena, is I didn't know any of my elected officials, and I just developed a relationship so I could pray for them. And then when Alan McNeil stepped down, he said, you know what, you should consider running. And so that's how I got here. And once I got to Raleigh, it was, quite honestly, a little bit discouraging, because so many people there, and a lot of good people there, but they use this seat because I want to go to that seat, and I want to go to that seat. And I'm like, where are the people that just love their community? And you know what? If God were to send me here or there, that's fine. But I'm here for one reason, because I love Moore County. I was born in Moore County, and I want to fight for Moore County day in and day out. And so, and there are special interests. They come and they push and they bully and they say, we're going to come after you. Well, bring it on. I don't need politics. I'm happy without politics. But I'm up there for my people, and that's the Moore County citizens. So it's an honor of a lifetime. The senator, the first time I called him, didn't know him. I was like, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. Talked to me for an hour and a half. Hmm. Told me the good, bad, ugly. Here's what you need to expect. Here's what you need to prepare for. And when we're in session, most of the time we do breakfast every day. And people say, why y'all do that? because we're working chamber by chamber for Moore County. Because it's not about us. It's not about our ego. We're nothing. We're just country people. But we're fighting for our citizens.
Well, and both of you are, it should be noted, fierce defenders of the Second Amendment. And that was, you were this past week, both endorsed by the National Rifle Association, the NRA. I assume that you were happy that that transpired.
Absolutely. I have been associated with the NRA for 35 years. I did the original consulting for them to set up their Friends of the NRA fundraising program, which they've raised over $150 million for over the course of time. I am a life member. I'm a shooter. I like to smell gunpowder in the morning. And there's an opportunity for our children to know and understand and be able to handle firearms safely and appropriately. And the NRA is that proponent to make sure that safety is number one. But the ability to be able to protect our property, our home, and our life is also adequately applied in there. And I do have the A-plus rating, which there's only two of those in the whole building. A's are super, and I've had A's before, but I've done a couple of extra things there, and I've got the A-plus, which I'm eternally grateful for.
You know, you mentioned, Neil, the servant aspect of being elected to the General Assembly, and I can only imagine that while it can be very rewarding and fulfilling to deliver for your constituents, it has to be eternally frustrating to know that, you know, you've got a Democrat governor, Democrat lieutenant governor, Democrat attorney general, and they wield quite a bit of, you know, influence, and they can disrupt what the majority in the House and Senate are trying to accomplish. How do you deal with that on a day-to-day basis?
Well, my mama taught me, early on, when life gives you lemons, you make lemonade. And so can we get everything that we want? We can't. But, I mean, Steve, I'm a pastor, financial planner for a lot of years, 13 years. I've been a pastor now for 19. When somebody comes to my church, I don't ask you if you're a Republican or a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just work with people. So you look, one of our strongest pieces of legislation passed the HB 805 passed unanimously in the House. And you say, how'd you do that? Well, I actually talked to Democrats, and there are some things, I mean, interestingly enough, about 85% of the legislation passes unanimously up there. And so everybody's not my enemy. He taught me early on, the senator did. He said, now, Jackson, we represent the saved and the unsaved. And he said, true. We got to represent them all. And there's some things when you don't have the supermajority, and when I went in, we did. Now we don't.
In the House.
In the House.
Yeah.
You got to work with people, and do I want the Hail Mary and the touchdown? Oh, yeah. But if I can get 20 yards and come back at 20 yards, sometimes that's what you got to do.
You mentioned 805. Just remind everybody what that is.
That's the sexual exploitation of women and minors, and it just goes overboard trying to protect these minors from being abused sexually, and women as well. There's a whole lot of people mm-hmm. being brought here unlawfully, and some people would say one of the least conservative people in the House of Representatives worked with me on that. And they said, Neil, you are totally opposite of that person. How did you get her to work with you? And this is what she would say. She said, Neil and I agree on about 10% of things. She said, but I really like him. She said,
there's
I really
something
do.
To be said for that in there.
Yeah. And there's just some things that my daddy told me this. He said, you can learn something from anybody if you will just be kind and listen. Now, there's some people I've had to listen a long time to, but we could learn a lot by just speaking less and listening more.
You know, one of the issues that people talk about quite frequently in our university system is the difficulty that a lot of state residents, students have in seeking admittance into our, you know, admittedly some very prestigious universities in this state. What is What is the status of trying to fix that?
Well, the status of that is that there's a rule, a requirement, a statute, and I'm not sure exactly how it applies because it's a moving target when you try to pin them down. But there's supposed to be about an 18% restriction, or no more than 18% of the population of our schools, our flagship universities, our UNC system, can be from outside of the state. Now, those seats all belong to the citizens of the state of North Carolina. They don't belong to somebody from out of the country or out of state. Those are our seats, and primarily I'm interested, just like Neil is, of our district being represented appropriately in the flagship schools of the university system of North Carolina. And we've got some schools that are over that limit, some that are exempted because of that. But the long and the short of it is we don't need to have somebody taking a seat that belongs to the rightful citizens of North Carolina and then on top of that selling that seat at a bargain price. We're a laughingstock in the rest of the country with our higher education because our price that we charge for out-of-state students is so cheap that they can come here. They can come here cheaper than they can go to their own in-state rates in their own states. And we've got to stop that. I've run legislation, I continue to run legislation, and I will continue to run legislation to stop that fiasco that's happening in our state.
And is it making headway?
It's like eating an elephant. It's one bite at a time.
Exactly.
The bureaucracy of the educational system of the higher ed has been engrossed and ingrained with one party for 140 years, and it's hard to break old habits.
Mm-hmm. Here's what I would add, and I'm on the higher ed committee. My mom was the first one who went to college in her family. My dad's family had been, and they were adamant on Neil Jackson, you're going to get a four-year degree, and you're not going to get married till after you finish that four-year degree. And that was from the time I'm like 8 years old. I'm like, college? I just want to finish sixth grade. But that was drilled into me. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Times are changing. I mean, I did the same thing to my kids. Four-year school is what we're going to do. We're going to get a four-year degree. We're going to do it. We're not going to get complicated with marriage and all this stuff till we finish our college degree. But you look at what? I mean, one of the greatest avenues someone can do today, be a plumber. Mm-hmm. I mean, you want to make six figures, you want to sell it in a few years for several million dollars, go be an electrician, go be a plumber. And that's why the senator and I so believe in what Sand Hills Community College is doing and has fought to bring money back from Raleigh, which is taxpayer money, and I tried to bring every dollar I can back to Moore County because Moore County pays a lot of money in taxes. Mm-hmm. And it's to give these kids, like my mom, who didn't have a chance,
yeah,
and maybe they say, I'll never go to UNC Chapel Hill, and I couldn't cut state, but I can go over here to Sand Hills and get a great degree, and that's what we need.
I mean, if you look at, and that's probably one of the under-celebrated aspects of living in this state is our community college system, what they call the Great 58, and the fact that it is way out in front of this move toward vocational education. And, for example, the nursing school at Sand Hills Community College, those graduates have like a 100% employment rate coming out of college, which is, you know,
well, and let me
not
add
true
that,
in every profession.
Neil touched on the corner. Let me bore down in it. We brought $25 million back to build a innovative high school at the campus of Sand Hills Community College with the vocational and career path tilt to it so that we can use this as a prototype that could be used from Manioto Murphy, also outside of the state, to give people that opportunity to get a certification, a registration, or an apprenticeship to go right to work making a lot of money. We've got kids that are doing electrical, we've got kids that are doing plumbing, we've got kids that are doing land surveying, we've got all types of the medical field, and all these kids are coming out making a living wage right here in Moore County, and they don't have to leave the county. They don't have to go to Chapel Hill or NC State or Western Carolina or wherever. They can make it right here. But we brought that back, and we worked with our leadership to craft that program to start as brand new. And we started this high school in 2 years. Never before ever in the history of our state has a brand new high school, new concept, new idea been started in less than 5 or 6 years. We started in 2 years, and believe it or not, we even had people criticize us for it. But Neil and I will both take ownership. It's our fault that we started and opened a new high school early.
Well, and it you know, the other aspect of it that's important is that it provides high school age students with the opportunity to develop that mindset that this vocational path forward is out there, and get them thinking about things they might want to do with their lives. Because we know the stories of kids who go to these platinum 4-year schools and they come out and they have no idea what they even want to do with their lives.
Plus student debt.
Yeah,
we have no student debt.
Exactly.
We have no student debt in this program.
Yeah, that's an important point.
And just a applause to some of the people that have gone before that Hope Scholarship that has given these kids a chance that never went to college, and now they can go to college for free. And, of course, we're talking to one of their board members on the college, so we appreciate all you do for the college to make it happen.
I was the last appointee of the Moore County Board of Education. That will be my legacy, because that was reapportioned, I guess you would say, going forward. Now we need to talk a little bit about in the context of Moore County. I've lived here permanently now for just over a decade, and the drumbeat is always on this fear of growth. You know, how do we control the growth? What are we going to do with all the population growth? And I, for one, you know, think it's a kind of a waste of time to obsess about it. It's going to happen because this is a desirable place to live, as we're seeing and it's pretty organic, this growth too. And the municipalities are responding to it, as, you know, whether for better or for worse, whether we want big apartment complexes or not, I guess they feel like there's going to be a demand for that. But how do you view growth in the context of planning for the future? We talk about things like our water supply going forward, and are we going to be prepared for that, as the population projections tell us we're going to have, you know, another 50,000 people living here or whatever it is in 20 years? How do you view growth?
You know, there's a pathway, and that pathway has to do with the infrastructure that you just touched on. If there's not water and sewer, there will be no growth. If there's not excess capacity, there will be no opportunity for growth. And most of the capacity is in the municipalities. And the municipalities, it is their job, not ours in Raleigh, but their job as well as the county, to control the growth and modernize the growth and handle the growth and structure the growth in the county and in the cities. Now, I've been blamed by my opponent for all these apartments that are being built and all these houses are being built. But, you know, I have nothing to do with that. Nothing could be further from the truth. That's local control. And as a matter of fact, he was even on the Planning and Zoning Board for a while before he got booted off. And he could have done something about it. I don't have a vote on planning and zoning. He did. But the long and the short of it is, that's a local issue, and it's all connected to the ability to have water, sewer, internet, backbone, electricity, paved roads, and all the things that go along with it, plus the ability to have schools. So, you know, Moore County has fabulous local legislation as far as the ability of our members of our towns, our communities, and our county to operate what you're exactly talking about. You hit the nail on the head. It's local control, done by local people, handled by local people, and there we are today. We've got a wonderful, wonderful organization here in both the cities and the counties doing that.
And yet some of the lowest turnout for elections are those involving the seats on the various councils: Southern Pines, Pinehurst, Aberdeen, et cetera.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you sort of, you know, you have your opportunity to go to the ballot box, and if you want something to change as a voter, you can affect that change.
It's what the ballot box is for.
Exactly. You're exactly right. So what about, Neil, did you want to add something?
I'm a principled conservative, and that the reason I am and the reason I'm Republican is because, very simply, I believe the Republican Party and the Republican platform is right. So I don't like Washington, D.C. telling North Carolina what to do. And you look at the Biden administration, I mean, they were just putting these crazy, insane, liberal way out ideas and trying to force it into North Carolina. And our common philosophy is we in Raleigh, we don't like forcing our agenda on municipalities. Now, sometimes municipalities will get outside the lines and we'll have to pull them back in a little bit, but that's who we are as principal conservatives. You talk about this growth issue. Well, Tracy and I, we have a farm. I mean, I got 60 acres and 30 cows that we loaded up with hay yesterday because I knew I had to come here early this morning. Farmland is greatly diminishing in North Carolina. And if somebody is not thinking long term, what are we going to do to preserve this farmland? We're going to be buying all of our food from overseas. One of the legislations, one of the bills that we actually passed this year, passed the House, hopefully we'll get it passed in the Senate when we go back in short session, was preventing foreign enemy countries from buying up our farmland. Because quite honestly, China's been doing that.
They certainly have.
And so what that means is you got to prevent this urban sprawl by letting all these builders go out in the middle of nowhere, and they need to be closer to where the utilities are. I mean, it's just principle, and we have, and I can't praise them enough, our current crop of county commissioners, they're doing that. I mean, this whole development plan that they've come together and done, we have had just private meetings about that, and it's a great plan. There is no perfect plan. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless Jesus does it, there is no perfect plan, but it's a great stab, and it's smart growth, and that's what we're for. We're going to grow.
Yeah.
But we just want to do it in a responsible way so our kids and our grandkids can say, this is the same Moore County that my grandpa grew up with.
Yeah. And what you said about farming, that is a not talked about enough, the growing, the fewer number of farms that are out there. A lot of them are not being advanced by the next generation. I read where the average age of today's American farmer is 57, which is, you know, much older than that's other professions. So,
well, China has already infiltrated our food system in the United States with the purchase of Smithfield Foods. That should never have happened. Needless to say, that was a bad situation. They'd raise a different type of hog to be sold and used in China than we have here in the United States. They like a real fat, a lot of fat on their animals, and they're shipping them out of Wilmington and Fraser boats every day, going to China, raised here in North Carolina, taken away from our food system right here.
So that the die is cast on that, but I guess the point of this is that going forward, we have to be much more vigilant about wholesale sales of land to foreign entities. That's a problem. Let's change the subject a little bit. Since I've been a resident, I've seen the state income tax rate go down. That's a good thing. I believe there's a plan to lower it down to what, 2.99?
All captured in what we call the triggers. When we go up significantly in income in North Carolina, in tax income, in gross amount of revenue coming into the state, we have a trigger that hits, and then we reduce incrementally the income tax. So all the money that we have in North Carolina in the tax system came out of somebody's pocket. We don't have a money press, and we must have, by statute, a balanced budget. So we are very conscious of the fact that if I take a dollar from you and give it to Neil, that's exactly what happened. I got to replace your dollar somehow or another. And we've been very blessed in Moore County, especially with having county commissioners that understand about the property tax here versus the property tax in many other counties. And so they've stood up this committee that both Neil and I are on to look at ways to protect homeowners from that property tax. But we're working very diligently to continue to make sure we have a balanced budget, to make sure that our budget is real, that we're not going to have shortfalls. And if we have extra money come in, that money goes back in the pockets of those taxpayers that paid it in the first place.
And those triggers that will reduce the income tax, those cannot be disrupted by like a Democrat governor or
well, all legislation made for the future can be disrupted because you can't bind a future General Assembly. But so far, I mean, you know, when you sell bonds, of course, or something like that, or but some things you can't put but so much of a lockdown on.
Yeah.
Steve, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but it's principal conservatism. People say, why are Republicans so worried about cutting taxes? Well, it's really not a tax issue. And both of us, I mean, this is our bread and butter. We're both senior chairs of finance. It's a freedom issue. And you go into some of our northern states, into our northern municipalities up there in Illinois and Minnesota. When you're taxed 80, 70, 100% of your income, you're a slave. And you look everywhere it's ever happened. When property taxes increase, so does poverty. And every time taxes are decreased, wealth increases. So it's just principled Republican hardcore philosophy, and that's why we are so committed to cutting your taxes, because we believe in freedom. This is the land of the free and the home of the brave, and when we give you back your money, you're going to spend it. Our tax revenues are going to go up. It has worked. Do you realize we have cut in North Carolina, and some of this is the senator because it's before I got there, the tax rate from 7.75% to 3.99%. And we're making more money than we've ever made as a state. And you say, how does that happen? You're giving back people their money. They spend it. Growth happens. And you have more taxes. Ronald Reagan taught us this.
Mm-hmm. And we have a balanced budget every year to prove it.
And a surplus.
And a surplus.
And yet the people, you know, just to our north, the people of the Commonwealth of Virginia just elected a bunch of Democrats who are going to raise their state income tax to double digits.
And why do you think all of these people from the north are moving to North Carolina?
Right.
It's a family-friendly state, but it's also a tax-friendly and an economic-friendly state.
Just last week, I talked to an individual who just moved here from New York. Their property tax on their home in New York was $18,500 a year for a 2,000-square-foot house. They bought a 4,000-footer down here in Pinehurst for $575,000, and their taxes are $3,200 or something crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're blessed. We got good government, and it's well positioned
and
for the future.
I would praise our county commissioners.
Absolutely.
And Nick Proserno, I mean, he's the tax-cutting legend.
Yep.
We're number two in the state with our property tax rate, and a lot of that praise goes to Nick.
Yeah. And he's got money in the bank.
We need to present him with a golden chainsaw, I think, being the master tax cutter. That would be appropriate and symbolic. Now, I just want to remind everybody that we're talking with State Senator Tom McInnes and State Representative Neil Jackson. They are seeking re-election in the coming cycle, which kicks off with early voting next week on Thursday, February 12th, running all the way through the end of the month, and then leading to Election Day on March 3rd at multiple locations. For those who prefer early voting, you have two locations at your disposal in Carthage, the Agriculture Center, and in Aberdeen, the Recreation Center. So you can either go ag or go rec. It's up to you. What else is on your mind this morning, gentlemen, as you prepare to sort of get into the heat of the election season here? And what would you like your voters to know when they contemplate going to the polls?
Well, the thing that I want everybody to understand is that if you have a problem with state government, you call my office or call my cell. It's a publicly published number. And we go to work for you. We don't ask you who you are, who your mama is, where you live, what your party is, what church you go to, or anything like that. We want to know what we can do to help you, because state government is a complex fraternity. It is an old fraternity that has been operated in an old-fashioned way for a long time, and old habits are hard to break. And we're trying to modernize it just as hard as we can. But we need to, for everybody to know, if you got a problem with state government, don't wait, because we can solve it quicker early than we can longer and late. So give us a call if you have a problem. I'm rated one of the most effective and efficient members of the Senate, and the reason for that is my constituent services. Neil does the same thing in his office. We look after the people, and that's what I want the people to know.
I'll go back to where we started. It's such an honor to represent Moore County and Randolph County for me. And when you send a representative to Raleigh, you send them to do just that, to represent you. And I get, I mean, we here in Moore County, some of our population has been incredibly blessed, and they're affluent. But there's other parts of our county that, you know, egg prices are still a little bit high, and milk still costs a lot of money. And you know what? Donald Trump has brought down the gas prices incredibly. But they're just still struggling. And you need somebody, and that's what I love about the senator. I mean, he didn't inherit his money. He worked hard for his money, and he understands. I mean, sometimes mamas just hurt, and they need somebody representing them, fighting for them, for their needs. And that's what we're up there for. I mean, some of my favorite legislation this session that we passed, it's because our local official said, Neil, you need to do this. Bill Britton says, Neil, we need to do something about deed fraud. And people are being taken advantage of. And so I said, Bill, jot it down and I'll work on it. And he did. And we went through five or six renditions and got all the people and we passed it. Mm-hmm. But it's because we're representing the people. School board people came and said, you need to do something about cell phones. And so sent it to every member of the school board and said, I want your input. Sent it to every member of the school board, and I have two school boards in Randolph County, said, I want your input. And they got all their input, and then the governor was praising it. And he says, hey, this is such good legislation, passed not unanimously, but close to being unanimously. That's what he and I are about. We are about just helping people that are hardworking families trying to raise their kids. And I'm a product of that. I was born here, yeah. I moved to Atlanta and started a financial planning firm, but I want to grow old here. I want my grandkids and my great-grandkids, if I ever have them, to know the Moore County that I was blessed with.
Steve, let me throw one in. We've talked about our local officials, our county commission, our city council and village council folks, and talked about how great they are, which they are. But one group I want to make sure we get an attaboy in on this morning before we get off the air is our sheriff's department, our local law enforcement. We have one of the finest sheriff's departments in the United States. And our sheriff brought to my attention the fact that fentanyl, the possession of fentanyl, was not a felony. And I had no idea. Nobody did. Neil didn't know it. We looked at it, and sure enough, he was absolutely correct. And we immediately ran legislation to fix that, to make sure that anybody in possession of fentanyl was appropriately applied with the penalties that were available for the day. But we knew about that because our sheriff was doing his job and paying attention. I want to make sure we give a great shout out to all our EMS, all our first responders, our law enforcement, because they are putting their life on the line every day. We want them going home just like they went to work every day.
And as we well know, there are areas in this state where the sheriff's department are not on our side sometimes.
Exactly, and our sheriff does cooperate with ICE.
And the senator and I, we both call the sheriff regularly and just say, hey, this is an issue coming up. What's your take on it, and how is this affecting you? Because we're not up there to do our thing. We're up there to do the people's thing, and I couldn't say it any better than he did. Thank God for Sheriff Ronnie Fields. He's doing the work, and that's why Moore County is what it is.
Well, gentlemen, Senator Tom McInnes and Representative Neil Jackson, I thank you very much for joining us this morning and sharing with us your insights from Raleigh, and best of luck to both of you in the coming election.
Thank you, my friend.
Thanks
and God bless America.
Well, as always, we thank all of you for sharing Saturday mornings with us. For David Hensley, I'm Steve Woodward. We're back next Saturday exposing deception, corruption, and rhino imposters doing what we do best, taking aim.